This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Oh, there we go. Try it again.
Yes, we couldn't hear you. I couldn't hear anybody in my earphones.
I'm just glad it wasn't one of those buttons to lift off at NASA.
I know.
Yes, it is rocket science.
On the show tonight, we're going to be talking to Ray Hill. We're going to sort of do a recap of the community meeting that happened on Saturday. I was there along with Brian, and of course, Ray gave a few comments or so. Then we are going to be talking to Noel Freeman, who is running for city council at large number four.
Just,
of course, I knew you would know that. He has gotten the endorsement of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and he has run before. So he's learned how to do that, and hopefully he will prevail this time. But, of course, we're a nonprofit organization, and KPFT does not endorse anybody. We'll see how that goes. And then in the second hour.
And at 10, we're going to talk to Josephine Titsworth, who is a trans activist. And we're going to talk about Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit that was held 3 weeks ago, and what came out of that summit, and what the future looks like.
So we have a busy fall going forward with elections coming up. A lot of things are going on in the community that we're trying to keep up with, and it was a nice discussion at the meeting. We'll get into that in a little while with Ray. Coming up in the show, we have in the future weeks, we are looking at doing a couple of really interesting things.
Yes, next Monday at 9 o'clock, we've got the Victory Fund will be here. We've got not Dennis Dyson.
Well, we have a representative calling in from Washington.
Yes.
And those of you who don't know, the Victory Fund helps fund GLBT candidates running openly for office. And Jennifer's taken the training from that. I took training from a precursor to the Victory Fund.
Yep.
So that has been very instrumental in learning how to
run. I enjoyed the Gay and Lesbian Task Force has a training, and then the Victory Fund training. I found the Victory Fund training to be most helpful.
And also, we have confirmed Cleve Jones, the activist and all-around good guy for the community, to come on and talk about the National March in October.
And if you don't know who Cleve Jones was, you didn't see the movie Milk.
Right.
He also is a person behind starting up the AIDS quilt, which is, you know, the largest piece of folk art in the world, from what I know. And then we're going to be doing one of my favorite things. We have a couple people from the musical Rent.
Yes, we have one of the leads, and a couple of the cast members will be on to sing whatever choice piece you want to sing, Jack.
No, I know better.
Yes.
Our audience is small enough now, so I won't sing, but I certainly enjoy the musical. So all that's what's coming up next week. So let's play a little bit of music, and Ray Hill will be on after that.
Well, I know you're the love of my life, but I won't.
from 2007. That was Josh Duffy, and from an album Artificial, the track I Will Love You from 2007. This is Queer Voices.
Well, this is Jack Belinsky.
And Brian Levinka.
And with us in the studio tonight is Ray Hill. And Ray Hill has a long history with this radio station.
A little bit, yeah.
From the beginning.
Didn't you build the radio station?
No, I was part of four people who struggled and organized. I joined KPFT in 1968, and we got a transmitter in 1970.
And then it was blown up in
1971.
Yeah, 1971.
Geez, I thought you were with Marconi inventing it.
Well, yeah, I could have been.
Well, and actually, you know, talking...
They did Marconi's older brother, actually. Well,
I see.
Talking about history, Saturday was the quarterly community meeting that sort of came out of the town hall meeting, too.
Sure. And well, actually, the Conference on the Future, if you recall.
Futures Conference, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's open, and we had Tim Brook over here last week to talk about it. And actually, I think there's more people there this
good pack.
It was
good
nice.
Nice bunch of people, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Today I had a sort of a long conversation, which was sort of being redundant, with Elroy Forbes. You remember Elroy Forbes?
Of course.
And, Elroy has been part of the band for a long time, and he was trying to reach out to some other organizations, and I says, well, they're no longer there, or they're no longer doing this, or they're no longer doing that. And it was sort of like things changed in the community.
Well, I mean, the world changed. Hello. Hello. The world has changed. Remember? Hope and change has come. No, actually, the world always changes, and sometimes faster than at other times, and we've gone through some relatively rapid changes, and the community was destined to change. Anytime you come from being completely on the outside to being damn near assimilated.
Knock on wood.
Okay. Damn near assimilated. You change. You know, I had a meeting with folks from Pride Houston recently, a couple of people, not the head honchos, but the second-ranking honchos. And I said, you know, for years and years and years, we've used the term pride. And we got pride, and we got a lot of criticism for using the term pride because it fits in some old religious thoughts that pride goeth before a fall, mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff. Actually, I think that's probably Shakespearean, not religious. But the problem is that we had to do that because we were dealing specifically with a group of people that had no self-pride or no common pride. In the 1960s and 70s, when I started organizing in the gay and lesbian, transgender, and bisexual community, we were the people that didn't like ourselves, and we thought even less of one another. And we thought whatever they heap upon us, we deserve. We accepted that. And you start talking about equality and getting out from under discrimination and prejudice, and people would just glaze over, and they didn't understand what you were talking about. And so we went through what I call our pride movement phase. And now the sin that dare not speak its name will not shut up.
Right. Well, but if you're talking about pride in general, it's not quite the same thing in that they didn't really get the word out.
No. Well, this time we had poor publicity for this pride. But we did so well in previous years that a single year's failing is not going to have effect on the overall. There's a whole lot of people out there that just do not understand right. what it was like to be gay in the 50s
yeah.
and the 60s.
And there's some good
don't
to
have
that.
A hint.
Right.
And hallelujah to that.
Well, do we still need pride? Is there still
I think I think we need the celebration of something every year that is our turf mm-hmm. and our time of the year. I'm just suggesting that because of the March on Equality mm-hmm. and other reasons that we look at the currency inequality, the yeah. word equality this year. We're damn close in a lot of ways.
I know.
Damn close. We haven't got the whole McGill yet, but, I mean, the marriage thing hadn't fallen in place. There is less and less resistance in this state. Don't go to Florida and try this on adoptions, and other things of this nature. And it's only because people have successfully done that and they got great kids and the kids are doing well in school and everybody can see that. And the people that are cutting their kids' genitalia off and otherwise abusing them are not us. It's somebody else.
Absolutely.
And so we're looking pretty good on that. So equality is something that is within our grasp. And I remember when I was selling the idea of town meeting one, and then it made less sense when we were selling the idea of the future, a conference on the future, our aspirations, our grasp needs to be just beyond our reach. We need to strain at the edge. To get
what are we reaching for now?
Well, marriage is the
big thing. How do you define equality? Is that just
just blend in?
Blend in. So
at this point, and Brian, you have no idea how difficult it is for me to say assimilation is our goal because all of these years I have I'm not the assimilating.
No,
guy.
Ray Hill's not that.
Well, in a lot of us in this community, we're like we wanted to have some differences. We wanted to be eclectic.
Sure.
We wanted to
have something to celebrate.
Yes, exactly. A difference.
Yeah. Well, but then you've drank my Kool-Aid all these years, Jack, and so I've had a lot of influence on you. That we are a separate culture. We are a culture apart.
We're separate, but we want those same rights.
Yeah, we want equality, and equality ultimately means assimilation.
Yeah,
that's where that's at. And so we're at that cusp, and I'm willing to, now. There are people out there who are not us that are going to be the last people to get it. Texas, as an overall entity, are going to be the last people to understand equality for gay, lesbian, transgendered, and bisexual people. And we got one cop out there. Now, recently in Fort Worth, we had raids. You know, one of those up against the wall mother kind of turn down the music,
absolutely.
Turn up the lights and search everybody. And somebody got hurt.
Well, yes. And as I said at the meeting, it's amazing how much coverage this got. And the coverage was not like, those bars should have been raided.
No. Well, media is sucker for a complete anathema, for something that is so anachronistic,
yes.
That is so unlike where we are in the stream of things, that they're going to jump on that. But then a week later, you had the same thing happen in Dallas.
Exactly.
Yes, although the Dallas raid was not quite the same thing.
Well, it was, they were dealing with more people. You know, the thing with the Fort Worth people, there weren't many people in the bar when the police came, and so they just really looked stupid. And they've all been reprimanded and all that. Well, we're not going to have any up against the wall mother, turn out the music, turn up the lights raids in Houston. But they are bird dogging.
Why is that, Ray?
Well, because you got some uppity queer that goes down and meets every police chief and says these are going to be the rules.
This is how we do it.
These are going to be the rules. And I'm the person that does that. And I go into the chief's office with portfolio, the backing of community elected public officials and the mayor, and sit down and say, all right, you know, this may be what it was like in Phoenix, but that ain't what it's like here. And so we get some ground rules. And so I'm going to go to City Hall tomorrow and speak before council and get Officer Holt. Has Glenn taken up an extra job? Glenn, are you, Glenn?
He's not listening.
Are you doubling as a police officer on the weekend?
He may wear the uniform.
He wears part of the uniform.
We've got a uniformed officer in a blue and white unit over there, bird dogging Tony's Corner Pocket. Now, two things. He may be looking for a date. And he may want that date to be predicated on a little B&D stuff. So he wears the uniform.
Pull him over.
Wears the uniform, carries his handcuffs. But here's the problem. If you come off the freeway or you come down West Dallas and start to pull into a parking lot and there's a squad car sitting in front of the bar with lights flashing.
You're not going to go.
And your name is George. That's what it says on your driver's license, but you're wearing big hair and a dress.
You're going as Georgian.
What are the chances? You know, you just don't want to go through the hassle of explaining why you're presentation is different from your driver's license.
Right.
That's why changing the gender marker in the court system is very important business for transgendered people. And that includes people who wear dresses part-time. I mean, if you wear dress part-time, then you don't want to change your driver's license, mm-hmm. but you damn sure don't want to be stopped in sequence. So, as the owner of Tony's Corner Pocket, a fellow by the name of, like, would you believe, Tony. Said, they're killing me here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they're killing me. It's not like somebody from New Jersey.
Why do you think they're picking on that one particular bar? Because of
You see, I don't think there's a they here.
Oh,
it's just.
I think that Officer Holt either literally is looking for a date, or has a problem. And you know, if he's going to bird dog a bar, I just assume he bird dog one over on the Pasadena border. And so that's what I'm going to City Hall. But I needed to go to City Hall about other things. There are glass ceilings. It appears that if you're an openly gay, lesbian, or transgendered police officer, and we have all three, if they find out your status when you're a patrolman, you shall ever remain a patrolman. And if they find out your status and you're a lieutenant, you shall ever remain a lieutenant. And if they find out your status and you're a sergeant, they'll call you sergeant for the rest of your career. So there's glass ceilings that abound. Now, I know a bunch of people who've come out later, men and women, and I know one guy that was accepted at the academy when they knew he was gay. But after he got out of the academy and became a patrolman, that's where he is. Now he's got several years' experience. He wants to move ahead. He would like to do some homicide investigation. He was trained to do that in college. But he's not having an opportunity because we have a policy in Houston that if you're an openly gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual police officer, you cannot get an assignment in what they call Special Investigations Division. That is Homicide, Narcotics, and Vice. You're not welcome there.
Why is that?
Well, because the people that manage those things, and you have rotating chairs. The captains say they come and go, but they really don't. They just rotate around and they come back.
Right.
And in those rotating chairs, those are the people that don't want gay people. You got to remember, when we got some people to impersonate gay people after the assassination of Paul Broussard. We had a vice versa program. When those officers returned to the police department, Houston Vice Squad ridiculed them for doing that assignment. So there's deep prejudice in there. And so I thought, well, I was at city council. Now, I know when you raise these issues in the election year, there's a limited amount of response you can expect.
Right. Those aren't hot topics and hot issues.
Yeah, I mean, in election year, nobody wants to touch it. The only people that may be interested in are people who do not have an opponent.
But at least you're out there speaking out against
it. Well, somebody's got to speak about it, and you put a flashlight on it, and they act like cockroaches. You turn the lights on, and they run, How many cockroaches were there before you turned on the light? Nobody knows, because the minute you turned on the light, they disappeared. And so calling attention to that has an effect. And it may get a little chatter in the media blogs. You know, I just love the now that every time you read an article in the Chronicle, you can go down and blog about it.
Right.
That's wonderful stuff. I had no idea how many people were so hateful about immigration issues until I...
They're hateful about anything anybody writes. They can find something to hate.
You know what it is? Those are people on government support. They are retired. They've got their military retirement. They've got Medicaid, Medicare, and veterans benefits.
Right.
And they're sitting home railing against the government getting involved in everything.
Right.
Hypocrites. But that's where we are. I'm kind of excited about Brian's involvement in the march. The thing about national marches, there's a friend of mine, Steve Alt in New York, who's probably the best organizer in the community ever. Steve just put out an editorial about this march lacks grassroots. And it does, but once you get there... if this is your first march and you go to Washington, or if this is your second march, or even like me, it's my fourth march, when you get there and you see all those gay people and you see all those transgendered people and you see all those wonderful people, who the hell cares about the politics of how it happened?
I've heard that too. And you know, the last one was in 1993, and we live in a different world now. I mean, things, the way you organize things are completely different.
Oh, sure.
So to get the word out, is it, you know, does it have to be grassroots, or can it just be word of mouth on the internet and it just builds from there?
Well, I mean, we're dealing with new phenomena with the internet and all of that, but it's going to be a little confused. And of course, I guess there's going to be fist fights behind the stage for who gets on the podium.
Who's going to be recognized?
Right. Who's going to get an opportunity to get their 30 seconds of fame?
Well, my mission is to get Houston, the Houston delegation, to the National March, October 11th and 12th.
You know what we did on the first march?
When was this?
It was 1979. I was the national chair of both the executive committee and the coordinating committees, because that was Harvey Milk's march, and he got assassinated.
Yeah.
And then the community in a conference in Philadelphia chose me to try to fill his ample shoes. Big flags. Big Texas.
Oh, yeah. I want to have, like,
enormous
huge Texas flags. Yeah.
And that, I mean, we weren't the largest.
I'm not sure after 8 years of Bush that might be such a good
idea. It's the celebration of the new Texas.
Yeah, right.
Coming out of everything.
No, Texas flags has a little chutzpah wherever it goes.
Yeah.
And to see some men, women, and trans people carrying big Texas flags.
We are gay. We are Texans.
Defiance and proud of all of that always attracts attention. You know, the first march on Washington was actually paid for by Frank Cavan, who owned a series of bars. Everywhere he went, he opened up a JR's. And so whenever I went up to get money from him, and he gave me $250,000 one day in cash.
Oh, my God.
And I went up to him, and he said, "Now, when's this march?" I said, "It's October. It's going to be Columbus Day weekend." Mm-hmm. He said, "Good, I've got time." He went to Washington, and he opened JR's.
I've been to that
in Washington.
Uh-huh.
It's a little bitty hole in the wall.
It's still there, I think.
It's a little bitty hole in the wall. But since his bar was the only one mentioned from the podium, after the march, people were aligned around the block three times.
That's a tiny little bar, though.
You had to wait to get in to buy a drink. He claims that he made more money that weekend than he gave me for the march.
I guess the gay dollar is
gay dollar doesn't talk, she screams.
Yeah.
But the Houston community is in good shape. This is a political year. This is a year when a lot of things happen, and the process that we go by selecting candidates is solid and dependable and good, and we went through that process last Wednesday. It was an amazing meeting. I wound up arguing with some of my best friends. I didn't win all the debates, but I support all the candidates.
Well, and I've sort of said this, the caucus is sort of like this big ship liner moving forward, and no matter how many people try to steer it one way or the other, it just keeps on moving forward.
Well, the trick, Jack, is that more of us think better than fewer of us.
Yes.
So if you're sitting out there at your home and you say, you know, maybe it is time, and we're so close to equality, I can forget about being afraid and all that. Maybe it's time for me to step forward and help. First thing you do is go join the caucus and join the decision-making process. We need your wisdom. We need your experience.
And we need that in all the organizations in this community.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a concern about a lot of them going away and not having replacements.
Well, that's true, but then others of them are prospering.
Yeah.
Some of them are prospering by assimilating other organizations. And I mean, my husband's name, look at Legacy Health Services is now moving into a new building, which is being extensively rebuilt for their purposes. Montrose Counseling Center, wears so many hats and all of that. But we're a very big community. We still haven't gotten the gay community center thing down.
No, but in a sense, the Montrose Counseling Center is sort of serving that purpose.
It's offering the resources. It's in a vacuum over there.
Right. It's offering the resources, and I've got to give credit for Ann Robeson, the director there, of keeping that first floor as a community.
Sure. That's becoming like the place.
There's a number of organizations that are renting space over there. Not only that, it's a nice building.
Uh-huh.
It's a very nice building. And the real, and I'm not being paid for this promotion, the real extra thing that they added on there was the history along the walls of that first floor.
Mm-hmm.
And GCAM is the organization that put that together, but it's the Montrose Counseling Center that's allowing that to be done. And that's just a great collaboration. And the fact that Pride's over there and there's other organizations over there is a great, great testament. Well, and those organizations are run under the Montrose Counseling Center.
Yeah, under the umbrella.
Right, but they're in the switchboard, of course.
They're independent, but they're all umbrella in there. When you sit back and you think of how far we as a people have come in a single generation.
Yes.
Fortunately, that was my generation.
Well, and we're talking about basically 40 years from Stonewall,
mm-hmm.
40 years this week from Woodstock, which mm-hmm. has some parallels there.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, 40 years from the day the Beatles walked across Abbey Road for that album cover.
Yes, Abbey Road. Abbey Road was born in Nigeria with a fake Australian, an amended Australian birth certificate, and is not a citizen of the universe.
Right, right, right. Ray, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Brian.
You can hear
Ray. I am very impressed that you had me down here when you're going to be talking to Josephine Titsworth, one of my favorite people in the world. And if you have Cleve on, give them both my love.
And you can hear Ray Hill on Fridays at 9 p.m. on the Prison Program. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Push your head into my neck.
That was Liz Clark from an album called Pursuit, and the title of that track, Break My Heart. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm John Torres.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 8, 2009. Tel Aviv, Israel's reputation as the most LGBT-welcoming city in the Middle East was shattered by gunfire on the evening of Saturday, August 1st. A masked man dressed entirely in black walked into an area of the downtown LGBT center that was hosting a weekly support group for LGBT and questioning youth and randomly sprayed the room with gunfire. Two were killed, 26-year-old gay counselor Nir Katz and 17-year-old Liz Trebishi. Some reports described her as a supportive heterosexual who had come to the meeting with friends. More than a dozen young people injured in the attack, described by one witness as a bloodbath, were rushed to area hospitals with four in critical condition. The unknown gunman fled on foot, and police are conducting an intense manhunt for him. Literally hours later, several hundred LGBT people and their friends held an impromptu vigil and protest against homophobia less than a block from the crime scene. Some 500 people also rallied in Jerusalem's Zion Square, and there were reports of smaller protests in Haifa and Beersheba. There's only speculation about the gunman's motive at this point, but local activists said inflammatory anti-gay rhetoric by ultra-Orthodox Jewish leaders and by some ministers in the coalition Israeli government could have spurred the assault. But Police Commissioner Inspector General David Cohen warned against tainting sectors and populations with suspicions. His office got a court-ordered gag order and media reports about the police investigation, but officials have expressed confidence that the gunman will be caught. At last report, detectives were continuing to interview witnesses and bystanders.
Even though Israel repealed its sodomy law years ago, and gays and lesbians serve openly in the military, same-gender unions are not recognized, and a few other rights have been won only in court cases. Ultra-Orthodox minority parties have generally stymied pro-LGBT legislation in the Knesset, Israel's parliament. Tel Aviv has long been considered the most queer-friendly city in the country, so news of the shooting literally shocked the nation. Condemnations of the attack have been widespread, ranging from local Tel Aviv officials and national religious leaders to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Earlier in the week, Welfare and Social Services Minister Isaac Herzog announced the formation of an emergency committee to determine how professionals can be of assistance to the LGBT community. His office released data saying that one-third of suicides among Israel's teenagers were due to what it called sexual identity confusion, and that over 80% of gay or lesbian teens said they've suffered verbal abuse. More than half reported physical attacks.
46% of Israelis surveyed in a Haaretz dialogue poll published this week in the aftermath of the shooting said they saw homosexuality as a perversion. 42% said they didn't, and 12% didn't know. Not surprisingly, those with conservative religious views thought of gays and lesbians negatively, while more secular respondents tended to be more accepting. Professor Camille Fuchs, who conducted the research, compared the level of homophobia in Israel to that of Bulgaria. Yaniv Weitzman, who leads a Tel Aviv gay youth organization, told the Haaretz newspaper that, "It comes as no surprise to me that almost half the public thinks I'm mentally ill and should be imprisoned, treated, or killed. However, if 26% of the religious and 27% of the Arabs say we're not perverts, you can say we've achieved something." Many of those hurt in the youth group shooting were not out to their families, and there were reports that some parents refused to visit their injured children in the hospital.
Residents of a Jewish ultra-Orthodox Haredim neighborhood in Tel Aviv threatened a group of young people who visited the area late this week to hang posters condemning the deadly shooting. According to the Jerusalem Post, the leader of the small group said they went to the area in an effort to raise awareness in every area of the capital that anti-gay violence affects all of Israeli society. He said that the local residents may have thought they were being blamed for the shooting and chased the young people down alleyways, but they managed to escape unharmed. "If we had known it would end like that," the group's leader said, "we wouldn't have put up even one poster."
Several vigils to honor the shooting victims and protest homophobia have been held around the world. Some 1,500 people marched in Berlin to the monument memorializing gay victims of the Holocaust and left bouquets in memory of the two Tel Aviv murder victims, Nir Katz and Liz Trebishi. Mourners also gathered in London, Budapest, Washington, D.C., New York City, Los Angeles, and San Diego. Quite a few actions have been generated through messages posted on social networking websites. Other protests and rallies were held or are being organized in Buenos Aires, Montreal, Vancouver, Toronto, San Francisco, Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, and several other cities. Meanwhile, the LGBT Center in downtown Tel Aviv opened 2 days after the shooting with beefed-up security on Monday, August 3rd. Activists have vowed not to let the carnage push them back into the closet, but to use it as an opportunity to build a more LGBT-welcoming Israel. We'll have on-scene coverage from our Tel Aviv correspondent, Iran Sikurel, later in the program.
Elsewhere, more than 5,500 people took part in the second LGBT World Out Games, July 25th to August 2nd in Copenhagen. The event, a rival to the Gay Games, was created in 2006 when the Gay Games had a falling out with its local organizers in Montreal, who responded by launching a duplicate international sporting event. Athletes came from more than 90 countries to the World Out Games. The week's events also included a human rights conference and art and culture programs. The night of the opening ceremonies, three participants were punched and kicked near Copenhagen Town Hall by two men who screamed "homo pig" at them. The suspects were captured and taken into custody for the duration of the games. The victims were treated and released at a hospital. 3 days later, a U.S. runner participating in the games, Dean Koga of Seattle, was injured when a man threw powerful fireworks, which some reports called bombs, onto the track at Osterbro Stadium. The alleged perpetrator was arrested and charged with committing a hate crime. Outsports.com said the 58-year-old Koga spent hours in surgery having a big chunk of plastic removed from his right hand. But he was back on the track the following day and won a gold medal in his age group in the men's 200 meters.
The Brazilian Association of Gays, Lesbians, Bisexuals, Transvestites, and Transsexuals has been granted consultative status by the United Nations Economic and Social Council. That designation allows a non-governmental organization to access UN meetings, deliver oral or written reports, contact country representatives, and organize events. Some 3,000 similar groups have consultative status. That's always been a lengthy uphill battle for LGBT groups, but organizations eventually have prevailed in recent years from Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, Spain, and Sweden. The Brazilian group's acceptance was supported by 25 countries, including Bolivia, Estonia, Japan, Poland, South Korea, the United Kingdom, and the United States. It was opposed by Algeria, Belarus, Cameroon, China, Guinea-Bissau, Indonesia, Iraq, Malaysia, Pakistan, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Sudan. 17 nations abstained from voting or were not present.
The American Psychological Association is urging its members not to tell clients that they can change their sexual orientation through so-called reparative therapy. A task force reviewing such treatment was created in 2007 to update the APA's 1997 study after noting a resurgence of groups that identified homosexuality as a defect or spiritual or moral failing. The task force examined 83 peer-reviewed journal articles published from 1960 to 2007. It concluded that there is no solid evidence that efforts to change a person's sexual orientation from gay or lesbian to heterosexual are effective, and that, in fact, such attempts can do harm to the patient. The APA suggested that therapists should recommend multiple options, ranging from celibacy to changing religious affiliation, to help clients whose sexual orientation and faith conflict. The task force's comprehensive report was endorsed by the group's governing council during the association's annual meeting this week in Toronto. The American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from its Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders in 1975.
And finally, young queer or questioning students who have problems in school because of their sexual orientation or gender identity may soon have a virtual educational alternative. The GLBTQ Online High School, believed to be the first of its kind, plans to launch in January. It's the brainchild of David Glick, who's had 25 years of experience in the education field, including the development of online learning programs throughout the United States. He says the school will be especially valuable for students in rural areas and those with no access to support programs at their brick-and-mortar schools, such as gay-straight alliances. According to a recent study by GLSEN, the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, almost 9 out of 10 such students have experienced harassment in their schools, and nearly a third of all LGBT students have missed school because of feeling unsafe. Some critics, however, worry that an online-only school might further isolate already alienated students. But Glick promises a safe and affirming virtual environment. He says the private tuition-based school will offer an interactive college preparatory curriculum consisting of mainstream and advanced placement courses customized to each student's needs and includes specific classes on queer history, culture, and politics. For more information, log on to www.glbtqonlinehighschool.com.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 8, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm John Torres.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And in the studio tonight, we have a political candidate for city council. And I must disclaim at this moment that KPFT is a nonpartisan entity and does not endorse either way in political local elections. So,
but we want to let people know someone, and if another candidate wants to come, they can always contact us.
We're just throwing the views out there, and you make your own call.
We want to know about the city and what the candidates see as some of the... Welcome.
This is Noel Freeman, yes.
Yeah, Noel. How are you
Friend
doing
of the
tonight?
Community.
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Good.
Oh, you got a deep voice.
Oh, you got a radio voice. You want to come over? Oh, you're a candidate. You can't be on the air.
Hey, as a co-host. I'll be able to come over here anytime you want.
Yeah.
So you're running for city council at large.
At large position number four.
Now,
yeah.
What's the difference between, for our listeners that may not know?
At large council members represent the entire city. There are 9 city council districts throughout the city, and then there are 5 at large council members. And those folks represent all the city, all the citizens of Houston, and everybody who lives in the city of Houston can vote for them.
I see. So is that a harder election to run?
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's 655 square miles of fun.
You get to block walk everywhere, huh?
Houston is a tough town to block walk. I mean, there are 329,000 parcels in the city of Houston, and you figure trying to get 120,000 votes to win, that's a lot of houses.
Now, I understand you work for the city now.
Yeah, I've worked for the city of Houston Public Works and Engineering Department for the last 5 years. I started out in utility customer service, solving the high-profile problems of folks who had problems with their water bills and their water accounts and service and all that stuff. And for the last 3 years, I've been in the city engineer's office working on issues related to infrastructure, floodplain management, and development.
So when we're talking about flooding, you know, issues with flooding, you have some experience about dealing with that.
Yes, I'm a member of the Texas Floodplain Management Association. My office oversees the Floodplain Management Office for the City of Houston, which regulates and permits all development in the regulatory floodway, what we also like to call the Special Flood Hazard Area. Lots of technical terms get thrown out around there, but a lot of folks just call it the flood area or the floodplain.
Is that the 100-year floodplain? 50-year floodplain? And what does that mean?
There are actually 3 parts of that. There's the regulatory floodway, which is the channel that actually conveys the water. And then there's the 100-year floodplain, which is kind of it's a technical term that is defined for what we consider a 1% flood event, and that is that in any given year or at any given time, there's a 1% chance that we will receive rain that will create flooding to that level. Then, of course, there is the 500-year floodplain outside of that, which means that there's a 0.2% chance that we'll have an event that creates that kind of rainfall.
And where does Tropical Storm Allison fall into that?
Tropical Storm Allison was off the charts, and we had parts of the city that had like 40 inches of rain in a very short period of time. It was absolutely crazy.
Now, in general, since we're on the topic of flooding, the channelways and the city infrastructure can only handle a certain amount of water per minute or per hour from rain. And what is that number? Is there a real number?
Our city infrastructure is generally designed for about an inch an hour, or up to 2 inches an hour. It's usually the infrastructure that we have in place generally falls somewhere between those two numbers. Of course, that changes when you have a lot of debris in the lines, when people are blowing yard clippings down there. There's trash. or we have old lines that just can't handle the new development, the new density.
But there are sometimes, especially in this time of year, we get those tropical storms run in, and you'll have one little segment area that may get 3 or 4 inches an hour for a short period of time. Is that what we call the spot flooding? And
yeah, we have a lot of problems with localized flooding here in Houston. It's a big problem, and that's outside of the special flood hazard area. You know, you see a lot of areas like April 28th. We had a big flood event here in Houston. You had about 2,200 homes that received flood damage during that time. We had a lot of localized flooding. These were in a lot of areas that were older. They were built in the 50s and 60s, back when we didn't really pay attention to flooding and drainage issues and the drainage impact when we developed. And so we're kind of paying for that now. The infrastructure is old. It hasn't been very well maintained. We actually are about $3 billion behind where we need to be on our drainage infrastructure. And we learned that after Tropical Storm Allison. Mm-hmm. You had 70,000 structures that got flooded. So we commissioned a study, and we learned that, well, you know, we hadn't spent $3 billion that we needed to spend.
Now, is that now the city and the county work together on the flood issues, do you not?
Yes, like all the bayous and whatnot, the actual regulatory, the channels and whatnot, those are owned and operated by, or owned and regulated by, the Harris County Flood Control District.
Okay.
So we work with them on regulatory issues. We work with FEMA on some of these issues. And it really is a collaborative effort on getting some of these things done.
Now, when I'm driving around Houston and I go over one of the bridges, the bayous, and I look down either side, and it looks like a forest. And you don't even see the channel.
It's so
pretty.
I mean,
it looks like, it looks beautiful. It's so wonderful. It's so nature-oriented. But I can see that's just one big problem. As far as water and flooding and getting the water to move.
Well, yeah, I agree. We need to do some maintenance. We need to work on collaborative efforts with the county on maintaining some of our channelways. Yeah, I drive through Houston. I go past some of the same bayous, and I see the same tires been laying there for 2 or 3 years.
Right. Exactly.
And these are the problems that we need to take care of, and we just haven't had the funding to.
Or the refrigerator that's still there.
Right.
I know where that one is, too. It's been there a year and a half now.
So, who is Noel Freeman, and how did you decide to run for office?
Noel Freeman is a lifelong public servant. I started out in the United States Air Force. I started out bright and early. I went off to become a signals intelligence analyst, worked for the National Security Agency and the Air Intelligence Agency. I did some combat operations support and target nominations for the President and Joint Chiefs of Staff during Operation Desert Fox, which is when we went into Iraq the last time back in 1998 when President Clinton was in office. After I got out of the Air Force, I went to Texas A&M University to get my degree.
Whoop. I have to give a whoop out for that.
Texas A&M. All right.
Yes, it was a good time. I was in the Corps of Cadets as a squadron commander for Squadron 18 out there. And that was a good time. Got my degree. Came down here to work for the city of Houston. Been with them ever since. And I decided to run for... the primary reason, I guess, would be... Yeah, Houston has done so well over the years. I mean, it's a great, wonderful, world-class city, but we can do better. And working for the city, I have a different perspective on a lot of the things that we're doing. And, you know, we worry about safe neighborhoods. We worry about economic and community development. And we have failed our infrastructure. You know, we have absolutely failed our infrastructure. And I've done some personal lobbying and trying to get us some of the funding that we need, trying to get some of these projects done. I serve on the Independence Heights Redevelopment Council Board of Directors. We have $0 budgeted in Independence Heights for capital improvement. That's $0 for our streets, for our sewers, for our water lines, and it's very frustrating. And because I couldn't make the difference and make those changes where I am today, I decided that it was important for me to run and be one of those leaders who can make the decisions, who can make the difference in Independence Heights and neighborhoods throughout Houston who face a lot of the similar issues that they do.
There's a lot of streets around the city that could use a little repair or total redoing. And there's some areas that still have open ditches.
I was going to say, you know, they're loosely called streets because they're kind of pathways. What do you see as the biggest challenge for Houston going forward, and what's the biggest issue on people's minds going into this election?
I think the biggest issue we're facing this year is the economy. Houston has been lucky. You know, Houston has a reasonably stable economy right now, but we're uncertain about where it's going to be. We don't know what's going to happen in the coming months, the coming years, and we've got to be ready for that. You know, we have a relatively flat budget. we are not projecting some good numbers for property taxes and sales tax revenue. And, you know, it's important that, in my opinion, that we invest in our economic and community development, because we worry about what our neighborhoods are going to look like. Housing starts are down 54%. So we worry about, you know, our community is going to thrive, our neighborhood is going to see some of the redevelopment that we need, or you know, some of the building on existing structures that helps keep them alive. Are we going to have problems in our core industries here in Houston that are going to affect our economy? We need to be able to attract new and different types of business and industry to shore up our economy. So if one industry isn't doing so well and another industry is doing better, it helps to stabilize our economy.
And this is a personal thing, and a disclaimer. I sit on the Buildings and Standards Commission, Panel 2, co-chair, actually. And we see a lot come in there about houses that are about to fall down. I mean, they're dangerous buildings, not just homes, but dangerous buildings. What can we do to get some of those down? Because in some cases, it may be 3 years after the commission orders it destroyed because no one's doing anything. Maybe there's no one left in the family to own it. What do we do?
Well, we need to be a little more aggressive on some of these issues. There's been a big push for affordable housing through the Land Assemblage and Redevelopment Authority, and most of what they do is tax foreclosures. But, you know, if we can look at some of these properties and deal with them. You know, we've had some abandoned structures in my neighborhood that we've had to deal with. They were full of possums, full of rats, full of mold, full of all kinds of things. And they're a health hazard to the community. And neighborhood protection works very, very hard. And, you know, if anybody has a problem like that in their neighborhood, they can call 311 and report the issue, and it's completely anonymous. And I think some of the reporting is beneficial, because Houston's a big city. And Houston, the code enforcement and neighborhood protection, you know, we've got a finite number of people, finite amount of resources, and a lot of times we depend on the citizens to call us up and say, hey, there's a problem. Most of the time, we don't know there's a problem unless somebody tells us.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Pretty much. That's exactly how it works.
Well, it's important on a number of levels, in that it's unsafe. Children playing around there, and a lot of them...
Crack houses.
Oh, yeah. There's some of that. Vagrants living in these places, and some cases they're dangerous to the point of damaging the houses around them. I mean, literally falling down. And only someone who comes to those commission meetings and listens to what is happening and see the photos and the videos can understand that there's a lot of that, and we just don't have either the funds or the will to get some of those things torn down. And if you have a dangerous home right next to yours, you understand what I'm talking about.
And I do.
You happen to have one.
I do. We've been trying to deal with it for a long time.
Now, I understand that you've recently received some endorsements. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, tonight I actually just came from the Houston Stonewall Young Democrats, where I received the endorsement there unanimously for my race.
Mm-hmm.
I also received last week the Houston GLBT Political Caucus endorsement, and prior to that I had received the Houston Area Stonewall Democrats endorsement.
Very good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And...
Go ahead. Now, I was going to ask, why should voters pick you over your opponent? What makes you stand out on the slate?
Right now, you know, like I said, I've worked for the city of Houston for 5 years. I have spent 5 years working to make Houstonians' lives better. That's what I do every single day. I have an extensive knowledge of how our city works currently. Yeah, I mean, I know what we're doing right now in the city government. I have extensive experience getting results, not just in public works engineering, but throughout our city. A number of initiatives that I have proposed have been implemented by Mayor White and other folks in the city. I have a positive record of experience, a positive record of getting things done, and I think that sets me apart and will allow me to come to council and bring fresh ideas and new leadership that we need at City Hall.
And if anybody wanted to get involved with your campaign, how would they do that?
Well,
or contact you directly. Let's just put it that way, so that we don't sound like we're endorsing you or anything. But how would they, if they want more questions, ask you some questions, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, we've got a great website. It's noelfreeman.com. That's NOELFREEMAN.com. And you can just send us an email if you want. It's info@noelfreeman.com, and we'll get back in touch with you. Folks can sign up for email updates. They can go to Facebook and just look up Noel Freeman on Facebook. We've got a group. There's me. I try to answer my own email. I try to answer my own Facebook. When I've got time, it's usually probably about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to say, how do you have time to do all that?
It's all that catch up in the middle of the night.
Well, Brad is doing it in the background.
Well, I know. I have a Facebook too, and it's impossible to get everything.
It's a full-time job managing that.
Yes, I know it is. And you're running for at-large for City of Houston. And when is the election day, anyway?
November 3rd.
November 3rd. But early votes, when?
October 16th or 18th.
So we want people to go out and early vote, right?
Early vote. Everybody should early vote. It's a whole lot easier.
You go there, yeah, and there's no rush and everything.
Okay. Noel, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And come back again.
We appreciate it.
This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Whales, enormous, mysterious, ancient mammals of the sea. They have lived in the world's oceans long before humans existed. We are awed by them, and we have worked to protect them. But now whales, dolphins, and other marine life are faced with a new and deadly threat. Our U.S. Navy is about to deploy an outdated and unnecessary sonar system called low-frequency active sonar. LFA is an underwater sonic bomb which blasts through hundreds of miles of ocean, a sound so loud that it can kill and maim whales and other sea animals. Many scientists predict that LFA could be disastrous for sea life. Join our urgent campaign to stop the Navy from using this lethal underwater weapon. Contact us now at SeaFlow, that's SEAFLOW, on the web at seaflow.org, or phone 415-454-4443. That's seaflow.org or phone 415-454-4443.
DIA presents Connect and Communicate, a seminar for South Asian teens, young adults, and parents on forming healthy relationships on Saturday, August 29th, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at University Center, University of Houston, main campus. Presenters include professionals from Child Builders, a Houston organization promoting positive social and emotional development in children, Montgomery County's Women's Center, and Saheli Austin. The highlight of the seminar will be an interactive theater performance by Gita Kaulagi and Voices Against Violence, UT Austin. The group will demonstrate the day's themes, such as communication techniques, overt and covert messages, power and control issues affecting relationships, cultural conflicts, and stereotypes and biases. For information on community events, visit KPFT's events calendar at kpft.org. KPFT Houston.
In the midst of
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
This is Brian Levinka.
No, this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And we have in our studio tonight a wonderful guest, Josephine Titsworthy, and she is a licensed master of social work.
Correct. That's correct.
But also, you're among many other things, a trans activist.
Oh, you could say that.
You could say that. You know, we know each other very well. We've been friends for many, many years and years.
We go back a ways.
More than we want to remember. One of the things is, tell me a little bit about what you're doing out at U of H, which is where you are.
Well,
you're going for another degree, if I'm?
Yeah, I'm working on my PhD in social work right now.
All right.
Got a couple more years left to do.
It's just not go down there and get it, right?
Well, you know, if I could go down to the Five and Dime. Oh, wait a minute, we don't have those anymore.
We don't have those anymore. The dollar store. And Dime turned into a dollar store.
If I'd go down to the dollar store, I'd buy one.
Now, exactly, you've been in this field for quite a while. Since when?
I'd say since 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've been in studies at U of H, Clear Lake, right?
Yeah. I graduated in, I started Sam Jack College in 1969.
And we don't need to go back that far.
And graduated in 2005. Okay. But I graduated from University of Houston Clear Lake in 2006 with a bachelor's in social work.
Okay.
And then I graduated from University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work in 2007 with a master's in social work. And I went straight into the PhD program.
Now, have you been using your skills that you've learned professionally yet, or how is that? Where are you now?
Well, as a volunteer.
Volunteer.
Now, I really have to make that clear.
Okay.
As a volunteer, I don't accept funds for what I do. As a volunteer.
We don't either here.
I notice. as a volunteer, I've used my license, Texas State license as a social worker, to help community activists, community organizations, the amelioration of social injustices, etc.
And in what respect when you say that?
Well, in 2003, the Dean of Students at University of Clear Lake asked me if I would work on getting gender identity expression put in the University of Clear Lake non-discrimination statement.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And he started it all. And just gave me something to do.
you woke up one day and says, gee, what am I going to do today?
Change the world today.
Yeah,
exactly.
Change the world. Somebody asked you to change the world. And I know that. Josephine has just been the backbone and the spearhead of non-discrimination for GLBT people. And I know that especially the transgender community.
Yeah, I concentrate on that.
Gender identity for those of you who don't know what that is.
Right. There's quite a few people working on gay and lesbian issues out there, but not near enough working on transgender issues. So I solely focus on transgender issues.
Now, you were there's somewhat of a story behind that, because weren't able to do that right away. It took several years to get Clear Lake to accept adding non-discrimination for gender identity to their non-discrimination policy.
Yeah,
tell us a little bit about that.
Well, after the Dean of Students asked me to get to work on it, I started, going through the policy change process at the university, and I started learning how the policy process unfolds at the university. And it was a struggle for about 3 years. And there was a huge learning curve. And one of the things I experienced at the beginning is that when I would go to places, other organizations, I'm not going to name them, but other organizations, to ask them questions so it would help direct me and where I needed to go, I never got replies. And so I was...
I understand that.
I think you do.
Yes,
with
HISD.
You've been working on that.
Larry Marshall hasn't returned my phone call yet, everybody.
Are we on week four?
We're on week four.
Yeah, well, we're going to make it happen someday. It's going to happen. It's inevitable.
But I understand. I understand exactly. It's very frustrating when people don't return your phone calls.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I had a huge learning curve, and most of what I learned was OJT. And
OJT,
on the job training.
Ah, okay.
But one of the things we did is we created a coalition out there at University of Houston Clear Lake, some professors, students, and staff.
Okay.
And we started strategizing how to do all this. And after 3 years, three hard years of advocating.
And this is why you're going to school at the same time.
Yes, I'm an undergrad student.
Full-time student. Okay.
Yes. After 3 years, the first committee we had to go through, we were stuck in that one committee for 3 years, and they finally took a vote. Now, when they were taking their vote, I closed my eyes. I did not want to see the results.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was unanimous. And when it was, I broke into tears right then and there.
I understand.
It was amazing. And then it quickly followed the rest of the committee process, and President Staples signed off on it. But it got held up at U of H Legal.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why? They didn't want to...
Well, there was a lot of research that they wanted to get done ahead of time.
Okay.
And so what I did is, after I graduated, I knew I wanted my master's in social work. And I was accepted at several master's programs across the state of Texas. But I wanted to go to U of H because the work had not been completed.
Mm. I got that.
Yeah. So I went to the U of H Central Campus and started furthering my education there. And I got involved with the Student Government Association. I'm currently the social work senator for Student Government Association.
Okay.
And we got the Student Government Association voted unanimously.
Senator Titsworth.
Senator Titsworth. It. Not Titsworthy, Titsworth.
I know. Oh, okay. I've only known you forever.
I know you have. But they voted unanimously in support of it. And it went through their policy change process. And as it turned out, every constituency group at the University of Houston Central Campus showed support for the inclusion of gender identity expression in the U of H system non-discrimination statement.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to just kind of recognize a single person, if I can do that.
Sure, go ahead.
At the University of Houston Central Campus, there was one person in particular who was outstanding, stood out from everybody else, a young man named Chris Busby.
Mm-hmm.
I think y'all may know Chris.
I work with Chris for the HISD policy change.
Yeah, well, Chris
currently
was
working on it. As soon as Larry Marshall returns phone call.
Well, Chris is just such an outstanding individual. And the GLBT community here in Houston, keep an eye on him. You're going to see he turns out to be someone really special as he grows. And so I just wanted to kind of give him a couple of accolades. But we finally got a phone call that was just last May that the provost and U of H System Legal wanted to meet with us. And we had discussions, and we're still moving forward. It hasn't happened yet. There's a lot of research that still needs to take place.
Now, as I understand it, University of Houston Clear Lake did add gender identity to their policy.
No.
No, they haven't. Okay.
It was approved and signed off by Dr. Staples.
Okay.
And but it had not been implemented.
Okay.
Because legal wanted to do some research.
So it moved up to legal, and that's where
yes.
we are now.
That's where okay. we are now. And it's looking promising, but until I see it in black and white,
right.
I'm still working on it.
Well, that's part of what we have to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, to protect our rights or to gain our protection and rights is
yeah.
a constant battle. Even
yeah.
after it's there, it's the enforcement policy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I found out with the HISD thing is that they do have sexual orientation in their bullying student policy, but mm-hmm. they don't enforce it.
Which right. is meaningless.
It's meaningless, and mm-hmm. unless there's someone within the administration or within their organization, they'll do it, which is the second part of the battle. The first part of the battle is to have the language.
Yeah.
The second part is to make sure that they implement it and provide
true.
Protection.
That's true. I'm a researcher, too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the research I've done so far, I've run across studies where at schools where it's been stated before that a staff person would look at a gay person and say, that's what you get for being gay.
Oh. Now, that's just recently. We had a teacher, an ex-teacher, on the air here, 3 weeks ago? About 3 weeks, anyway, yeah. in the last month, who it was for an unrelated reason, and at the end of it, he wanted to make a slight statement, and we found out he was a teacher at HISD, being openly gay, who lost his accreditation because he defended a gay student who was beaten up and put in the hospital.
Wow.
And when he defended the child, because they wanted to send the gay boy to the alternate school, saying that he was the troublemaker
right.
when the guys that had beaten him up, put him in the hospital, were not.
Oh,
and
wow.
when the teacher went to his defense, the principal got him decertified and fired. You know,
yeah.
all
That's
that.
Terrible.
There is no protection for sexual orientation, gender identity in HISD as far as employment and teachers. So
there's
everyone's
no
terrorized.
There's no protection anywhere in the city, in the
no,
state.
No, there's not.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of out
not
there.
At all.
Josephine, do you see that
the movement is progressing, or what are the challenges for the GOBT movement, especially the T portion?
Well, T's something I know a little bit about.
Right.
We're still at the early stages, because I'm concentrating really on colleges and universities, more so than up in Austin, although I do lobby in Austin. I'm primarily concentrating on colleges and universities. Mm-hmm. There, in the past few years, there's been a couple of universities, Texas A&M, Texas State, who have contacted Phyllis Fry.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know love Phyllis. We love Phyllis
Those
Fry.
Those of you who don't know what Phyllis Fry are, where have you been?
Under a rock.
Really. You know, as Freeman told me out in the lobby, he says, when I came down, I was given an invitation to go to Phyllis's house where we all end up. But
is that a Ray's place?
Or Ray's place, one or the other. But they would contact Phyllis and, Phyllis, we want to change our non-discrimination statement. How do we do this? And Phyllis invariably would tell them, you need to talk to Josephine. Mm. And that's what brought on this last month, the first Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit.
Which is a perfect segue into Ooh. What I wanted to ask about that. And for those in the audience who didn't know, here, what was it, about 3 weeks ago?
Uh-huh.
There was a summit that you were instrumental in putting it all together. It was at U of H, the
Graduate College of Social Work.
Thank you. And it was a summit to look at, and I was a participant in that.
Yes, you were.
And I learned so much about what it takes to try to get some changes, which I've implemented a number of things and gotten some information
right.
that came out of that summit mm-hmm. in my endeavor to change the HISD ship of state.
Well, that's what the summit was for. And so we could share. Like, you know, I told you in the beginning, at UHCL, I started off on this movement to get the change without any direction or any education on the issue of how to do this. And I learned the hard way. Oh, God, I made so many mistakes. Mm-hmm. But I learned the hard way. And I wanted to come back and share this with others. And that was the reason for the summit. You know, people need to know they're not alone out there.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you know you have a support network like that summit,
mm-hmm.
it really kind of takes some of the pressure off.
Well, there was a number of people there that I really appreciated, and the representatives from the ACLU were... I really enjoyed
Fleming
their
Terrell.
Presentation. Yes, because you get so focused in on what you're doing in our local area, whatever we're doing as an activist, and to see and hear about what's going on in the rest of the country.
That's right.
And some of the landmark decisions that are going through the courts that
That's
and
right.
how we may be able to show that here. And the HISD, I provided them with some of the cases legal. Only to find out that they were the legal department at HISD is very resistant to anything having to do with sexual orientation or gender identity. Oh, yeah. I think they have a personal problem. But that's neither here nor there. The fact is that there is case law.
Yes, there is.
If they will recognize that case law.
Mm-hmm. There is.
I was told that it'll take the board to do something that the administration, whichever it is, the old one or the new one, will not recommend. It will have to come from the board itself.
Well, you know, that's kind of where Texas State's at right now. the Faculty Senate at Texas State University endorsed the change to put gender identity and expression in their non-discrimination statement. But the issue was stopped by the president of the university because the president of the university did not want to take the issue before the Board of Regents.
Mm-hmm.
And so
these would be the Board of Regents appointed by Rick
the
Perry,
governor,
Pretty Boy
Rick Perry.
The Aggie.
Yes.
Good, Governor Goodhair.
Yes. Yeah.
Pretty Boy.
Yeah, Pretty Boy. And so that the president of that university would probably be willing to work with this if the president wasn't so concerned about the Board of Regents.
Right.
So that we've identified a barrier at Texas State now. So now we need to sit down and think about a strategy. How do we deal with this? We know where our barrier's at. Now we need to strategize. How do we overcome a barrier?
Mm-hmm.
And that's some of the things I was able to learn and I'm still learning.
That's the process of learning, and what I got out of the summit that I was taking back to our strategy working with Chris Busby,
mm-hmm.
With HISD, is the fact that there are a number of those trustees that are up for election this time.
Yes.
And to strategize that when they have their little gatherings, that someone from our community is there to ask them
where they
stand.
Think? Yeah.
And to get them on record as being a homophobe or a progressive.
Transphobe.
Yes, a progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Who believes in equality and fairness for all citizens, not just their selected few.
Right.
Well, we all know, and Jennifer, you and I have been in this community a long time now. We all know that all the transgender individuals in the community, nationwide really, all we want is to be able to compete on a fair playing field. And one of the things I've been promoting at the universities and colleges is back in the 80s, there was the NAACP commercial where they talked about a wasted mind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And this applies also to HISD. If you don't recognize and implement policies for the transgender youth or the transgender individuals in colleges, you're going to lose those precious minds.
Well,
you run the risk.
Well, it goes further than that, and I know we're talking about trans people, but sexual orientation is the same way.
Same way.
I mean, the teacher we talked about here a few moments ago, as well as all of the other teachers within HISD and employees who are closeted for fear of being outed or and losing their job.
Yes.
And because of the stigma that it's placed on it, when the administration itself does not say it's wrong, and if it's wrong, they enforce it. If they're not going to say it's wrong, then it gives people a license.
That's correct.
To abuse and to be prejudiced.
Absolutely.
And it's gotten the blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, you know, if you're working in that kind of environment and you know that the administration above you is not going to back you up, you know, you're not going to step out and do what's right.
No, and you'll live in fear every day from alienating someone within your working group or your, in the case of HISD, the principal, who is sort of God at the school. And if you do, then they'll get rid of you, or they won't renew your contract. Even so, they're hurting so badly for teachers, they will not renew someone because you're GLBT, because you're a troublemaker.
That's right.
Or just a straight progressive who's a friend of the community.
Mm-hmm. There was a news article that came out about 3 years ago of a young student at a high school up in Round Rock, Texas,
mm-hmm.
who was transgender. And he had learned to cope with the way people had, you know, bullied him, teased him, etc. Until one day, he was walking home from school, and some of the older guys there at the high school,
bully boys,
encircled him and started urinating on him.
Oh.
This was in the news article,
wow.
And urinated on him.
Uh-huh.
And he went straight home. When his mother got off work, she always knew that he would be home, but when she got home, she couldn't find him.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked all through the house, and finally she went out in the garage, and he had hung himself.
Oh, no. That's horrible.
You know, so this is, bullying has consequences.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, it does. And to have an administration say they don't have a bullying problem when a group out at Rice University did a study on bullying in HISD,
yep.
And provided the administration with what the information they had found, that they do have a serious problem, especially with GLBT people,
yes,
students, that they've ignored it. They've given it lip service but haven't done anything else. Now, the hope is that the new superintendent might be different, but we're not in the process. They're going to make a decision, and there are no protections if it's not in writing.
Well, you know, a lot of them take the position, And the active stance of, if I apply enough pressure and punishment on you, you will change your behaviors. And as y'all were talking about earlier about the APA sending out this study where they said, we will not recognize reparative therapy for treatment for GLBT people. But yet we have administration, teachers, etc., who are stuck in this old stigma that we were all taught. Well, as I learned, not all of us were taught this, but many of us were taught that these people are really way off the benchmark. They're just way out there, and we need to bring them into normal behavior.
And that's true. And the fact is that the acceptance of the quote-unquote bully boys and allowing them to get away with it, thinking that the GLBT individual or student, they're the troublemaker, because if they weren't gay or trans, there wouldn't be a problem.
Absolutely.
And the truth is that many times the bully boys will take on a straight kid who just happens to be different. Maybe he's smart. Maybe he's just a geek. And they just don't like him because they're a bunch of dumb brutes.
Mm-hmm. That's one of your big pitfalls, because then we start stereotyping people. And this is a huge pitfall. Not all feminine males or masculine women are gay. Imagine that.
Imagine that.
You know, so if you have these bullies who come in and solely go by stereotyping, profiling, etc., there could be some serious consequences.
Well, and a lot of it comes from home, the homeless.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll step right out there. The pulpit, from certain pulpits who preach that, you know, it is evil to be gay or lesbian or transgender or both. And the fact is they are given the right to do something bad to us because somebody who apparently is says they're speaking for God, that it's okay.
Amen.
And it's so sad, because part of, this is a segue back to part of the summit, was talking about religion and how it deals with it. And it was very interesting for me to hear some of the passages in the Bible who were traditionally used against our community when taken in its full context doesn't mean anything like they're portraying it to be.
True.
They pick and choose their little words.
Pick and choose. Well, you know, people can parse almost any kind of words, because words can mean anything. And I've found that if you just go by the basics, that God loves all of us.
God loves all people.
Yes. And absolutely. And if you're
well, God made us this way.
Well, God doesn't make mistakes.
I agree.
That's right. You know, I always tell people, if the label society puts on me is a post-operative, secondary, transsexual, lesbian Christian.
I like to remember that, or I try to remind people of the fact that, yes, God doesn't make mistakes.
That's right.
So therefore, I was put here to help you learn to be love, and to have love and tolerance for all people.
Yes.
Which is what Jesus the Christ taught.
Yes, that's what he taught.
Funniest thing.
But, you know, what I hate is, it's a choice. You make the choice to be gay. There was never a day that I woke up and said, gee, I want to be gay. I want to be, you know, this outside group that's ridiculed throughout society.
Well, that's like saying that I woke up one day and, gee whiz, I've been a male for so many years, I think I'll just be a female
just
tomorrow.
Gonna switch
to, who in their right mind,
especially,
of course, someone would say, I'm not in my right mind, but would say, who's in your right mind to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on, you know, medications and psychiatric treatment, and because we've got to have the
money,
counseling and money, and then the surgeries and all this, to be ridiculed and spat upon by a bunch of ignorant people.
Exactly. And especially in the
state. I didn't volunteer for that.
No,
I didn't. No one would do that. And because it's not, it was part of us. I knew what I was from the time I was,
you know, and getting to know you has kind of opened up my perspective and kind of more understanding of the transgender issue. And
Josephine said,
earlier. Trans people, and then we'll speak directly to the trans. Trans people just want the opportunity to have the same ability to have the same life as anyone else.
That's correct.
We're citizens. We vote. We pay taxes. And we just want to have a job, compete fairly with anyone else, and when we have that job, that we're protected, that we're not going to lose it because someone just doesn't like who we are.
Right.
I mean, this is the same sort of thing that people had to endure when for blacks or for Jews during certain
right.
periods.
Mm-hmm.
For that man, Irish
right.
at times.
That's right.
And there's a level of prejudice that runs through society through each generation. And it seems that this generation has been the GLBT community.
This is the time, yeah.
And if you look at history, this too will pass. And what people are fighting against today will be... okay, because the younger the hope is and the promise for our community in the future is that the young people don't think anything about it.
I've heard that the young people don't even they ask why not have gay marriage. You know.
Oh, I tell you, it has come so far.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the days when I'd pack up a suitcase and an ice chest, go to a motel room and lock myself up in there for a whole weekend.
The example I always like to tell is in my own family, my niece, who is now 21, but she was 9 at the time. And I was talking to my sister on the phone about it, and she was very emotional about my transitioning. And she was in sobbing a bit, and she hung up the phone, and then my sister told me what happened after that. Laurel asked her what was up, and she told Laurel that I was transitioning to become a female. And she looked at her, and she cocked her head to one side, and she said, "Oh," and then went back to watching TV.
Oh, my God.
So we have hope for the future.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, this Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit.
Yes.
This is going to be an ongoing thing once a year. And we've set up a Yahoo's group so that those interested in changing their non-discrimination statement can have others they can talk to. How do you do this? What did you do in this situation? Because no one set method works at every university.
Now, what had happened at Texas A&M? How did what's the status there? And
well, the status at Texas A&M, they don't even have sexual orientation in their non-discrimination statement. So it's an uphill battle. And every time suggestions have been sent to the chancellor, the sexual orientation stuff has been marked out. Line item veto.
I believe it.
And I have a question, and I have to answer. I didn't get a clear answer to this, and that's when the summit was first scheduled. It was scheduled at Texas A&M.
That's correct.
And what happened with that?
Well, that's what we really wanted to do. We wanted to have it there because it was really important for the GLBT faculty, staff, and students there to have a message sent. And it also would send a message to other universities. There wasn't enough time to really pull it together.
Hmm.
We tried. We did try. It just wasn't enough time.
Okay.
So we moved it to U of H. And my dean, now you got to meet my dean.
He's terrific.
Is terrific. Absolutely. Dean Iacobi.
Oh, I wish everyone in the world was as understanding and loving as he is.
Well, he voluntarily suggested we use the multipurpose room at the Graduate College of Social Work for this summit.
Excellent venue, by the
way. Oh, yeah. It was really nice. But understand, too, now there was an advantage to doing this. We learned something from this because this was the very first one. And what do you do on the first one? You start learning, how can I make it better?
Right.
Absolutely.
And so now when we go for the second one next summer,
mm-hmm.
We're going to try again at A&M. Don't know if we'll be able to pull it together in time. We're going to try again. But we want to move it from university to university to university.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Everyone feels a part of it.
A road show for non-discrimination.
Thank you. Just like, what is it, antique road show?
Yeah. The non-discrimination road show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, A&M is my alma mater, and I'm hoping that one day that there will be a non-discrimination for not only sexual orientation, but gender identity. And
yes, and expression.
No, I'm surprised that Phyllis hasn't been more influential there. I thought.
Whoa. Yes, she has. They've named an award after her.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yes.
She hasn't been quiet there. It's still the resistance. And, too, remember that trustees of these universities are appointed by the governor.
Governor Goodhart.
And the Republican, conservative Republican governor has been appointing conservative individuals to the boards. And so it's been an uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
It will take actually a change in the government of Texas and about the second term till these trustees turn over to a more progressive thinkers.
And I think that will be the benchmark is when you establish that at Texas A&M, because that's Republican University. And to get it done there will be something, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, all right. I have some friends who are conservatives, who are gay.
Mm-hmm.
And they really support what we're trying to do on this non-discrimination stuff. They really support it. And we have a tendency to blame everything on the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. There are some gays in the Republican Party. Yes, can you believe that?
I've met a couple.
And me, I'm a socialist. I'll tell you that right now. There's no question about that. But there's some interesting points that are being made by these people. And I like to listen to what they have to say. Absolutely.
Well, it's important. And by the way, we're listening to Josephine Titsworth.
Titsworth, not Titsworth.
Titsworth, that's what I said. I got it right this time. Okay. I've only known her for years. I got it.
Yes, you have.
Yes. And give me the website again so they'll know. And we've been talking about, trying to get gender identity or expression in the non-discrimination policies of the colleges and universities throughout the state. And there was a summit here within a month ago to talk about that at U of H that Josephine was the leader on, to putting it all together. So, and you go ahead.
Well, the Yahoo Groups is, you go search Yahoo Groups for Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit and apply to join that group.
Right.
Of course, because we're announcing this on the air, you'll be asked a few questions to verify your reasons for joining it.
Hmm.
But you can also talk to your university people, your GLBT groups, your student government associations, your faculty senates, etc., and start planting seeds. It doesn't happen overnight. Unless you're University of Texas at Austin, they did it in 3 months.
Wow. Yeah.
Because that was going to be my follow-up question, was the fact that what do we do? You've got people out here. We've been talking for a while about moving the ball forward, if you will.
Right.
And what can they do? What can the individual who's listening to the show do?
Get involved with the Texas Non-Discrimination Summit. Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit. Get involved with it. You can email me, too. I mean, I don't know if I can put that out.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Okay. It's social_worker. I'm a social worker. So put an underscore between social and worker at juno.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always email me for more information. And we want universities, whether they're private or public, in the state of Texas, to recognize the need for human rights issues.
And absolutely.
Transgender people fall into that category. There's only two universities in the state of Texas that have implemented. UT at Austin and Rice University, which happened to be the very first one.
Hmm.
And no one else has done it.
Wow. And again, we go back to all the reasons we've already discussed as to why it is that way. I want to thank Josephine Titsworth for being here. We'll have you back some other time. Just let us know, because this has been a very interesting conversation. And, Brian, do you have anything else?
No, I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Letting us know a little bit more about the trans side. So we always have the GOB. We want to have not a silent T.
Yeah, the T is no longer silent. And this is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
A shocking tragedy brought as many as 70,000 gays, lesbians, and their supporters to Rabin Square in Tel Aviv on the evening of August 8th. They were joined by Israel's ministers of education, culture, and welfare, and by President Shimon Peres, who's never been considered a friend of the LGBT community.
כיהודים, כישראלים.
The shots that hurt the gay community hurt us all, as human beings, as Jews, as Israelis. The person who aimed his gun at Nir Katz and Liz Jubeshi aimed it at all of you, at all of us, at you, at me. We cannot allow that in our society.
אסור שיהיו אקדחים ואקדחנים בקרבנו.
One wounded and traumatized survivor of the rampage shared the stage with Paris. Speaking from a wheelchair, youth counselor Chen Langer was barely able to control his emotions before the candlelit crowd. The villainous murderer who looked at me with his cold, wide-open eyes and pulled the trigger didn't give me a minute to collect the sweet children I was responsible for to get them under my wings and protect them. I will never forget the dead eyes of the two pure souls that had been butchered. They stared at me then, and they keep coming in my nightmares, wanting to remind me that we cannot be silent. We live in an injured society. We need a solution now. We need social peace. Rabin Square rally organizers were not deterred by menacing phone calls and online threats. Activists in other cities who were arranging transportation to Tel Aviv faced similar harassment. A Defense Forces soldier is in custody for posting terrorist threats online. Police say they're investigating similar calls and messages. It had been just a week since Tel Aviv's reputation as a safe, queer-welcoming city had been shattered. This way, our correspondent Eran Sikirel takes us back to the beginning.
The streets of Tel Aviv were filled again on Saturday night, August 1st, with the sirens of police and emergency services. The voices were all too familiar for Israelis. Was it a new terrorist attack? That's always the first guess. However, Tel Aviv has experienced a few very quiet years. The wars in Gaza and Lebanon were not really felt in the seaside city, and the much-condemned wall was at least working for the Israelis. So could it have been another terrorist attack after all these years? Something was different. Emergency services were the first to get a clearer picture of what was happening as they got the first calls from the scene. There's been a shooting on Nachmani Street. Some people were injured. We ran away. Something is very wrong here, said the boy on the phone. The emergency service people who rushed to the scene started to realize that the LGBT community center was the target. The small three-room apartment was used as a gay club for teenagers. Kids came here every weekend to find some comfort among their LGBT friends, to drink some coffee and maybe find their next sweet 16 love, sometimes without the knowledge of their parents.
שלום לכם, אנחנו נאלצים לקטוע את השידור בעקבות אירוע ירי במרכז תל אביב, בבית קפה.
TV stations were now reporting on a heavy toll. 2 dead and 10 injured, some in very serious condition. The masked shooter managed to get away from the scene. Initial stories headlined the Columbine-style massacre.
בסביבות 10:40 נכנס מישהו לבוש שחור, מכוסה פנים, והתחיל לרסס לכל עבר, עם אקדח.
At 10:40, a guy with black clothing and a mask came into the club and started shooting indiscriminately. He shot at me. At first I couldn't feel it, then I was shot again. Only then I realized that it was real. So I hid under the table while he kept shooting. There was blood everywhere. It took only minutes for the information to trickle through Twitter and Facebook. The message to the LGBT community was clear: get out to the streets now. It wasn't long before the streets of the first Hebrew city were filled with an ever-growing stream of thousands of familiar faces, walking together to the murder scene. "We are not afraid," the protester chanted. "We will fight homophobia." For a minute, it all seemed too familiar, especially this year, as if the movie mill created an image that had to be repeated on the other side of the globe. And it was all there, the candles, the crying, and the deep sadness.
"I don't care who did it. For me, it's a terror attack. For me, the guy is the same like a Hamas terrorist.
Oh, about 40 years ago, we were all living in kibbutz together, and now you hear about horrifying stories about people coming in, shooting innocent people just over hatred, and hatred between Jews and between human beings.
Jews aren't supposed to kill Jews, not here in Israel. And the state of Israel is for all the Jews, not just for a portion. We should all be here to live together. There's enough hatred against Jews in the diaspora, and we shouldn't have it here in our own land."
The LGBT Community Center staff tried to support both the injured and other shocked members of the community.
"Some people are asking us, what shall we do? Shall we not go anymore to any gay bar? Shouldn't we go to any place? And we're still telling the people, no, don't forget that it happened, but we still think that you could go out. Tel Aviv is still open, gay bars will still be open, and you're welcome to go to any bar you want, because you could be safe there."
And then came the finger pointing, especially against the ultra-Orthodox Shas party. Its leaders, some of them are ministers in the coalition government, have never missed a chance to incite hatred against lesbian and gay men, comparing them with animals and portraying them as child molesters. The LGBT community is accustomed to this accusation as part of the heated political debate in an ever-aggressive political atmosphere. But it was now clear that words can not only injure, but also kill. Mike Hummel, the head of the LGBT Association, demanded the change.
"We're demanding that the government, that the Knesset, that the politician will do something to prevent the abuse of the parliamentary system that gives politician immunity for absolute disregard for human life, that gives them a free hand in spreading hatred."
It's been 4 years since the last hate crime against the LGBT community, when an ultra-Orthodox man stabbed three participants in the controversial pride parade in the holy city of Jerusalem before the police stepped in. But this time it was different, because the killer decided to strike in what many call the gay Mecca of the Middle East. Guys holding hands is a far from rare sight in Tel Aviv, where two council members are gay, and the city embraces a pride parade that draws thousands. Tel Aviv also just opened a huge LGBT center that frequently hosts government ministers. No one could see this coming.
"Tel Aviv is the city for the gays. All the gays live in Tel Aviv. When I finish the army, I live in Tel Aviv, because all the gays live in Tel Aviv."
"We came here to protest against the hate crime, the first hate crime in Israel, in Tel Aviv, in the heart of the free and actually gay community."
"The biggest shock is to think that it happened in Tel Aviv, which is the most tolerant city in the country. It's very young, it's very free, people feel safe, especially there where it happened."
The day after was a day of reflection, even for right-wing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who condemned the attack.
"אני קורא לכל אזרחי ישראל, אנחנו מדינה דמוקרטית, אנחנו מדינת חוק, אנחנו מדינה של סובלנות.
I call the citizens of Israel. We live in a democratic country, a country of laws, a country of tolerance, and we have to respect everyone." But for Galuchovsky, a gay journalist and activist, that was not enough.
"והגיע הזמן שביבי נתניהו, ראש ממשלת ישראל, יגיד את המילים האלה, הומואים ולסביות, שהוא יודע..."
The Prime Minister could not say the word gay and lesbian. It's about time for Benjamin Netanyahu to say these words. Leading the protest in the streets of Tel Aviv was Tzipi Livni, who heads the political opposition in Israel. Unburdened by political partnerships with the ultra-Orthodox, she felt much more free to speak.
"פשע השנאה הזה צריך להיות נקודת מפנה ולתת כוח.
לתת כוח לילד לבוא להורים ולומר אמא ואבא אני הומו או אני לסבית.
I believe that today, this horrific day, will be a turning point that will give you strength. Strength to the boy who comes out to his parents and says, Mom, Dad, I'm gay, I'm a lesbian. After such a statement, Prime Minister Netanyahu had to do something. For the first time, an Israeli premier came to a gay community center. The promises, however, were quite general. I understand that there are special needs to the gay and lesbian community. I ask for my ministers to check the issues that has been raised. A clear message was delivered in a special session of the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, by openly gay legislator Nitzan Horowitz.
אם מישהו חושב שמעכשיו הקהילה הגיעה תסתגר ותסתתר, תחזור למחתרת, תחזור לארון, הוא טועה.
If anyone thinks the LGBT community is about to start hiding away and go back to the closet, he's so very wrong, said Horowitz. The community will rise up with pride and will only expand its activities. It will reach out to more and more people who need it. With such an unprecedented political consensus, the community was now left to bury its dead. The first to be laid to rest was Liz Trubisky, a self-identified heterosexual 16-year-old girl who just came with gay friends to the meeting. The second was Nir Katz, a 24-year-old instructor who used to operate the club every week. Nir lived with his German partner Thomas for the past 4 years. This week, over his partner's grave, Thomas shed tears and couldn't say a word. Nir's sister Chen made a moving plea. She laid a rainbow flag over the fresh grave and delivered a message of pride. I'm standing here with this flag today because we don't want to hide it. We have to raise it up, to show what hatred could cause. To anyone who had any doubts, I want to be clear, the family is standing totally behind the gay community. We love everyone and support everyone, and they support us. It's a struggle that starts from here. We will uproot the hatred, because everyone are made equal, and it doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is. So Israel now has its own Matthew Shepherds. The 2 dead and the 10 injured left the LGBT community with a reminder that it has to work even harder to combat homophobia. But it seems like now it may have more partners for the road ahead. The community here will heal its wounds. However, Nir's partner Thomas will have to live with the real consequences. But as Israeli gay singer Ivy Lider, the most popular singer in the country, says in one of his songs, Thomas was in some ways lucky. Lucky for having 4 amazing years beside his partner Nir. Lucky for having the chance to love. Reporting for This Way Out in Tel Aviv, Amiran Sikurel. אני זוכר ש...
שפתיים שרוצות אותי קרוב, ואני יודע שזכיתי
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, John Torres, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Sherry Lund, and Aaron Sicurel contributed program material. Ivry Leader performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WRNC, Ashland, Wisconsin, CFUR, Prince George, British Columbia, KFAI, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. For the 1,115th time, please stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
It's a regional celebration of life, culture, and acceptance. And it's quickly turning into a major annual event in none other than northeastern Pennsylvania. This is absolutely incredible. This is where I'm from. They now have, this is their second Pride Festival that they're having. They have drawn an estimated more than 1,000 people came to a five-hour Pride Festival at a place called Kirby Park. I can't believe this is happening up there. And they actually had the part of that park sort of roped off because they were concerned about protesters. Four protesters showed up.
Ah.
Just absolutely amazing.
Now, is this like the Quaker area?
No, it's not quite. It's not the Quaker area. This is an area that was made up of a lot of Eastern Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
It's an area that has been in trouble ever since World War II, the economics of it, mm-hmm. because the coal industry and the steel industry and the trains that used to crisscross that is all gone. It's just absolutely amazing that something like this has happened. And these Pride festivals are springing up all over the United States and all over the world.
It's like a rash.
And, there's an organization called Inner Pride that sort of is a loosely like United Nations of Pride committees, where they have an annual conference that happens in different parts of the world. And so you hear about some of these stories about some of these Pride festivals that happen in these countries where they're not so friendly to GLBT people. It is a movement that's just for 40 years has been going on.
So we want to thank our guests tonight.
Who do we have?
Oh, well, the last one was Josephine Titsworth, and we talked about trans issues and non-discrimination. And before that, we had Noel Freeman, who is a candidate for at-large place four. In the city of Houston. And the first one
was, of course, the incomparable Ray Hill, the legend.
Yes, the legend. The Godfather.
And on next week's show, we're going to
lead off with the Victory Fund. We're going to have a representative from the Victory Fund.
And we have Cleve Jones is scheduled to appear, the activist legend himself.
Absolutely. And we want to thank everybody for listening to us tonight. This is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Levinka.
And Jack Belinsky.
Thank you.
You have
have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
90.1 FM at Howl in the Blues proudly present A Howl in the Heights. Hey, this is the Blues Hound inviting you to join us on Sunday, September 27th at Dan Electro's Guitar Bar, located at 1031 East 24th Street in the Heights. This is going to be a special show benefiting your listener-sponsored community radio, 90.1 FM. $10 is going to get you in the door to hear the music of the Space City Aces and the Brad Absher Band. Once again, that's A Howl in the Heights, Sunday, September 27th from 4 to 7. Doors open at 3. Come on, get off the porch and run with the big dogs. Ow! KPFT Houston.
DIA presents Connect and Communicate, a seminar for South Asian teens, young adults, and parents on forming healthy relationships on Saturday, August 29th, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at University Center, University of Houston, main campus. Presenters include professionals from Child Builders, a Houston organization promoting positive social and emotional development in children, Montgomery Counters Women's Center, and Saheli Austin. The highlight of the seminar will be an interactive theater performance by Gita Kaulagi and Voices Against Violence, UT Austin. The group will demonstrate the day's themes, such as communication techniques, overt and covert messages, power and control issues affecting relationships, cultural conflicts, and stereotypes and biases. For information on community events, visit KPFT's events calendar at kpft.org. KPFT Houston.
In the midst of
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.